Turner, and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. You know who you are, working conservatives. Good morning to you. The neocon death cult poop is starting to stink, my friends. America is not buying it, Mark Riley. Dig this. 25% new ABC poll out only moments ago. Just a quarter of Americans think the White House is fully cooperating in the federal investigation of the leak of CIA operatives' identity. Dig that. 25%.
I'm surprised it's that high, to be honest with you. These people have acted so thoroughly dishonorably. But, you know, before we get into that, I have to say, you've acted dishonorably, Marin.
Yes.
Bringing in this zucchini poppy seed bread of yours.
Yes, I made a zucchini bread because I'm a hippie girl. That's right.
No,
that's
you want to put all of us to sleep. See, because what happens is, folks, no. Marin brings this bread in. It's delicious bread.
Yeah.
But at this time in the morning, if you eat it, you're going to curl up in a corner and go back to a womb-like state and try and go back to sleep.
Not if you keep eating it, Riley. You just keep shoving it in your face and you'll stay up for hours. The weird thing about that is I've become this weird person who I buy food and I refuse to throw it away. I will not throw food away if it's not bad, because that's the right way to do things. So I had these two zucchinis I bought last week. I already cooked the other ones and ate them with the brown rice,
mm-hmm.
And they're just sitting there. They're just sitting there starting to, you know, they're going to, I didn't want them to go
turn.
Bad. They weren't turning, but I'm like, I ain't throwing them out. I'm going to make something with them. That way I learn and I bake and I do things. All right, Kayla, what was that look for? You're sitting there munching on it, giving me a dirty look like I'm some sort of hippie.
It better not be bad zucchini.
Oh, no. No, it's not bad.
He's thinking of his intestines. That's
I threw out the bananas that were bad because I thought I was going to make a banana bread, but I already had one in the freezer. And I also make this for my wife because she doesn't eat wheat, and I make it with spelt. But, so, 25%. Wow. There's nothing. I should make some of my Captain Hippie's Party stir fry for you with tofu and vegetables. It's so funny, hippie cookbooks, they always have these ridiculous titles of recipes. You know, Captain Farty stir fry.
Captain Farty?
No, they don't really, but you know what I'm talking about. Captain Farty's Cosmic Stir Fry. Me and my wife were laughing.
Lord.
Hey, let's get back to the news.
Yeah,
hey,
only 25%.
25% of only 25%, but there's a related poll that says 25% of people in America are stupid. How can you not see that this guy is completely stuck and he's completely lying? I'm referring to the President of the United States. Also, I noticed on AOL last night, Riley, most people don't like Karl Rove. That's the weird thing about Karl Rove coming out and being under, you know, the spotlight.
Yeah.
Is on him, and he's, you know, a suspect, and he is the guy that leaked the information. He is the traitor. But even if you don't believe that, when you look at him, if you've never seen the guy who is actually running the country with Dick Cheney, if you've never actually seen him, it's almost the first time you see like an albino cavefish. You remember looking like at those Time Life books, and you're like, oh my God, where does that live?
Yeah.
That's sort of like the first feeling you get when you see Karl Rove. Well, Bush made some statements last night or yesterday on television. And he's twisting what he said originally, you know, what was that, about a year ago? Yeah, in June of last year, where he basically said that if anybody is in my administration is had something to do with this, I'm going to fire him.
Yep.
And yesterday he basically said, if anyone in my administration committed a crime, then I'm going to they will no longer be in the administration. They committed a crime. See, the way these guys play with semantics and words and legalese is disturbing because it's got nothing to do with the truth.
Well, see, that's where I think the American people are starting to get off the Bush bus.
To smell it.
Yeah, because what you have is an administration that will attempt to use and parse language in ways that most Americans, I think, find distasteful. If you say you're going to do something, then you're supposed to do it. That's what supposedly attracted all these people to Bush in the first place. And what they find, what the people are starting to find, is that Bush is the same kind of political hack that he accused the Democrats of being in the last election.
And I love this because I think that he's being, you know, I think that anything that happens in his White House or anything that happens that comes that is found out in this investigation, he should be taken to task for. He is the president. The buck stops with him, and he should answer for it. But I think what's going on now, and we've talked about this before a little bit off of the mics, is that he's caught in the crossfire. The neocons that hired him. All right, now this is Dick Cheney's neocon death cult. This is Dick Cheney's neocon death cult. George George Bush was always a front man for the neocon death cult cabal. Okay, so what's happening now is the neocon death cult, which is, you know, operating on the project for the new American century, the Pax Americana. The neoconservative ideology is that Americans will rule the world at any cost, at the cost of civil rights, human rights, Geneva Conventions, whatever. We will run everything. There will be a state of eternal war. We will police the planet. We will make the military global, and that's the way it's going to be. And we will do that no matter what. So these guys come in. They pay Bush off. You know, they set him up. He's the president, but they're running things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they want to go to Iraq no matter what. So anybody that fought with that case, the lies that to go into Iraq, like Ambassador Joe Wilson, he gets nailed. They out his wife. They make an example out of him for anybody else who will contradict their lying policy to justify this war.
Well, yeah, and you've got Richard Clark, you've got Paul O'Neill, you've got example after example after example. I'm going to tell you something else. I'm going to predict this now. The next move they make will be the grand distraction. That will be the Supreme Court nominee. You're hearing all these stories now that Bush is talking about, you know, maybe he's going to name somebody. That will be to take the heat off of him as far as this Roe thing is concerned.
Yeah, the Supreme Court nomination distraction will happen in a few days.
Yes.
I think you're absolutely right. But now you also have the religious right. See, the cabal. Here's where Bush is stuck, and this is what we're going to get into today, is that the cabal is in trouble. They are about to be found out, and it could go as far as, you know, Cheney could be involved. I think he's obviously involved. Libby's obviously involved. Rove is involved. This is Wolfowitz's big plan. This is, you know, Pearl's big plan. Now, all these guys are involved, and whether or not they created a covert culture of attack in terms of threatening and putting out threats to anybody that contradicted their idea of what the world should be, and whether that is bigger than we assume, which we think it is.
It could be. And see, this is where things get very interesting, because people have talked about Karl Rove in terms of possible treason and possible perjury.
Mm-hmm.
But if it turns out that this neocon cabal has been collecting classified information with an eye toward punishing opponents of this administration, that could be framed as espionage.
Much bigger than Watergate. And, you know, in terms of where George Bush is, clearly he knew about all this. The details we don't know. But what is he didn't expect to happen, I think, is that the neocon death cult has put off the CIA. They bullied the CIA initially. They bullied Tenet initially. They bullied them to give them the information they wanted to make their case for war. And then after they got found out, the CIA took the hit. Now most of the intelligence apparatus has been moved into the Pentagon with Donald Rumsfeld and newly appointed
Negroponte.
John Negroponte.
Yeah.
All right, so the CIA is pissed off. We've talked to many CIA agents, ex-CIA agents. They're pissed off. Their agency has been gutted, and they've got a bone. You know, they've got a bone to pick with this administration. So the CIA gets this independent prosecutor, this grand jury, to look into this leak. So this is, a lot of people don't realize this, and you don't hear much on the TV, is that this was initiated by the CIA, because there is a war between the CIA and the neocon death cult. This is behind Bush's back, though he's the front man. Now, with the Supreme Court nomination, the religious right wants what they got coming to them. So now they got Bush on the hot seat saying, you give us our guy because we want to overturn Roe v. Wade, which probably won't happen in the very near future, but he is on the hot seat. He's caught in a crossfire between the neocon death cult and the CIA and the religious right and the neocon death cult. So that's what we're going to get into today. We're going to hear from Bush. We're going to hear from Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation. Did a great little piece on what Bush is, you know, what he should have done. And then we'll also sort of, you know, parse some of that language. But we're going to make a case for this, that Bush is going to be left hanging with the bag along with the religious right, but two different bags. It's 15 past the hour. It is Tuesday. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Thank you.
20 past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're getting into it. ABC poll released moments ago, 25% of Americans think the White House is fully cooperating in the federal investigation leak. So I could surmise, Riley, that means 75% of Americans don't.
No, they don't.
They don't think so.
Not no way, not no how.
And what we're setting up here is that we've got President Bush caught in the crossfire. He's caught in the crossfire, though he is not guiltless, certainly. He is no victim. I'm not trying to make him a sympathetic character. But the neocon death cult is now paying for where the position they put the CIA in, you know, after 9/11. They used the CIA. The CIA took the hit for 9/11. CIA took the hit for the faulty intelligence that led to the war. And the CIA, they then instigated this investigation by federal prosecutor Fitzgerald and the grand jury looking into the leaks, which could turn out to be a big deal. Now, on the other side of that, you got Bush scrambling to get a nomination on the table for the Supreme Court by the end of the week to hopefully distract from all the bullets flying around him and, you know, gunning and aiming at his friend Karl Rove, his symbiotic twin, his strange you know, faux lover. Okay, so now he's caught in this crossfire. The religious right demanding that, and that's the thing is that Bush would not be in the White House if it weren't for the Christo fascist zombie brigade who gave him the votes, and now with the Supreme Court nomination, they want their payback.
They want theirs, and they have. See, this isn't a new thing with them. They've been looking for theirs for a long time, going back to Richard Nixon. They haven't gotten it. They expect it out of this one.
So I think he's going to leave them ultimately, like not unlike Reagan did ultimately, and George H.W. Bush. He's going to leave them hanging out to dry, really. But I'm jumping the gun. Let's get back to the issue at hand, which is if Bush wasn't responsible, if he didn't really know what the facts were around this Rove leak, why didn't he find out on his own? You know, he does know. And I think that there's a Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation this past Sunday, you know, really did a nice little piece of essay-style journalism. This is from a guy who's a real journalist. He's a wise person. He moderated one of the debates. He's seen many presidents, and he had this to say.
Instead of appointing a special prosecutor, what if the president had just called in his top people in the beginning of all this and said, folks, we have a problem here. I need to know who's been talking to Bob Novak, and I need to know today by the end of business. That's what presidents used to do, and they're usually pretty good at finding out when they really want to know. Not many people had the nerve to lie to Lyndon Johnson when he looked them in the eye, and Richard Nixon figured out early on who Deep Throat was, and now we know from Woodward and Bernstein that on that one, Nixon was right. Instead, this White House did what it usually does when challenged. It went into attack mode, called charges that the White House had leaked the name ridiculous, and allowed the controversy to boil until a special prosecutor had to be appointed. Now, 2 years and millions of tax dollars later, the president's trusted friend and strategist, Karl Rove, has emerged as the top suspect, and we're left to wonder. Can anything said from the White House podium be taken at face value, or does the White House just deny automatically anything that reflects badly on it? This could and should have been dealt with inside the White House long before it reached the special prosecutor level. Instead, the president's people followed the modern public relations rule, never admit a mistake, just do what is necessary to kill the story before it kills you, which often works. What they are learning, though, is that when that involves tearing down the character of your critics, it can also be very dangerous business.
That's Bob Schieffer on CBS's Face the Nation this past Sunday. You know, really laying out the truth of the matter is that if he really wanted the facts, if he really did not know them, and it was important to him, he would have sat his staff down and said, all right, someone be straight with me so we can manage this properly. But because this guy operates on a CEO model and first operates, if they can, they're going to do everything they can to displace the blame, you know, obfuscate, smokescreen, do everything they can to get this out of the public's eye and lie. That's what they do. This is not a president who takes responsibility. But if by some miracle he didn't know the nuances of what was going on, which is possible because I feel that on some level he is trying to make his way back to the children's table, that he's being taken advantage of. And that would even, I think that you can see that. That's one thing that I'm starting to realize is like they're leaving him hanging with the bag. The big boys are now like, you know, in a real, they're in a shooting war
anymore with the CIA, and they're just letting Georgie just sit there like a deer in headlights, you know, try to, you know, cover for him, which is all he ever did to begin with.
Well, they've been in a shooting war with the CIA for a while. Remember that Dick Cheney, in the run-up to the war in Iraq, did something no vice president had done before, and that was personally go to Langley to meet with CIA officials. And remember, too, that if you go back to that same period, in late 2002, in the fall of 2002, something that was kind of quiet but very significant took place. That was when the Pentagon actually began to start using its intelligence apparatus as a separate and distinct entity from the CIA. And where were they getting their information from? None other than Ahmad Chalabi.
Yeah, he proved to be really credible.
Oh, yeah, he proved to be really credible. And maybe this is at the root of why they're doing all this obfuscation at this point. Because they don't want to have too much scrutiny on exactly what led them to start this war. Because there have been too many Americans killed, too many Americans maimed, and right now, there's nothing.
Well, that's what we have to remember what this is about. This investigation is not, it's not about a leak per se. What it's about is falsifying the evidence, falsifying information in order to go to war, you know, based on lies. And this was, at the core of this is one of the lies. And they got called on their lie and they ruined someone's life. They compromised national security and they sent out a message to a lot of people that would criticize any of their other lies. And because of that, over 1,700 Americans are dead. Thousands, upwards of 8,000 are injured. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians are dead. And in, you know, Iraq today and yesterday, just a disaster area that there was no vision for the future. But this is what the neocon death cult wanted. This is what their design was from 1995. And they used George W. Bush to facilitate that, which he gladly did. Not trying to make him a sympathetic character in any of this. I hope he takes the fall. I hope they all do. But let's make sure that he can't swirl out of this in any way. What happens on his watch is his responsibility. We're going to Iraq after this, so stay here. It's 27 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's Tuesday.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
We're going to be talking about Pete here and the incredible things that penguins go through just to basically reproduce.
Yeah, most people don't really realize what penguins go through. Just being able to raise their eggs and raise their young to adulthood, sometimes it's so difficult. It just, you know.
I got to tell you, we've had a lot of movie stars and things here. No one's been as excited as to see the live penguins. Stay with us. It's going to be hard to top the penguins, but President Bush set to speak from the White House in a few minutes from now with leaders of five African nations.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, it is going to be hard to beat those penguins. 35 past the hour. It's Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Folks, we'll be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnson will be there to play some music. We'll be giving away a stuff. Johnny K Street, Milf Cardinal Milfington will stop by. That'll be at the Tea Lounge once again in Park Slope, Brooklyn on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday from 6 to 9. I'll be at the Gotham Comedy Club here in New York City. But that, you know, keep that on the, you know,
Deal.
Yeah. You know, you can come if you want, but I'm not pressuring you. You know, it's going to be me and a few people. I'm going to try and work on some new material. But if you want to come down, say hello, you're more than welcome to, and enjoy the show. That's what I say. Hey, listen to this. Nearly 9 out of 10 New Yorkers now stock emergency supplies in their homes in case of a terror attack or other disaster. This is according to a survey released yesterday. All right. 88% of New Yorkers stock some emergency supplies in their home. 51% say they have an emergency plan. Now, that one I want to hear. What's the plan? I don't know. To go? Just to get out? 55% have a go bag of supplies to take with them in an emergency, including copies of important documents, contact numbers, cash, bottled water, snacks, flashlight, portable radios, prescriptions, condoms. I'd put that one.
Oh!
And the poll results suggest New Yorkers are aware of the hazards we face. That's what Commissioner Joseph Bruno
OEM, yeah. Office of Emergency Management.
Hey, what do you got? What do you got a plan? 866-303-2270. What's your plan? What do you got in your go bag?
You know what's different about this, though, Mark, is that the blackout from a couple of years ago in August of 2003 kind of woke a lot of New Yorkers up as far as, for example, not being able to access any money.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, the ATMs aren't working? Where am I going? That's why people keep cash in these go bags, because they have to have some way to, you know, some kind of money.
I always keep a little cash. I got a cash. You know, I'm not going to say how much or where it's at or where I live.
Mark Maron. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Let's get on with this. You know, because it's interesting, in England, obviously, the Royal Institute of International Affairs put out a report that basically said that Britain's support for the U.S. in the war put them at a greater risk for terrorist attacks, which means that the Americans, the United States is now connected with terrorism in the eyes of Britain. The report said that the war had boosted recruitment and fundraising for Al-Qaeda, which is suspected of being behind the attacks on July 7th. The government's response was delivered by Foreign Minister Jack Straw. He said, quote, the terrorists have struck across the world in countries allied with the U.S. backing the war in Iraq and in countries with that nothing to do, whatever to do with the war in Iraq. It is the responsibility of people in the civilized world to stand up to that terrorism and not provide them with any excuse, whatever. 2/3 of British people believe there is a link between Tony Blair's decision to invade Iraq and the London bombing, despite government claims to the contrary.
Well, see, this is Tony Blair's worst nightmare, and a lot of people saw this in the immediate aftermath of the bombings in London, that people would tie this, because there is such widespread disaffection inside England with British participation in the Iraq War. That's why you're seeing these down-low timetables about when the British troops are going to get out. And that's why you're seeing more people, even inside his own party, criticizing Tony Blair.
Well, you know, it's what people don't realize in the face of what happened in England and in the face of what happens, you know, around the world in general in terms of violence is that the violence in Iraq has never been worse. It is completely chaotic. It is out of control. I mean, just in the last 2 days, 24 people were killed by insurgents, including police and government workers in a series of shootings that just were all over Iraq. This is the thing that you don't realize. When you just hear the body count, when you just hear 24 dead, 18 dead, 10 dead, 50 dead, you don't. It's not nuanced in the sense that we're talking about 8 policemen in a gun battle. Okay, in western Baghdad, 6 police in a different situation were killed in 5 different attacks in Baghdad. So that's 5 different attacks that killed 6 people, and outside of the 8 policemen that were killed in a different neighborhood in a gun battle. A police colonel was killed while he was driving his car 60 miles north of Baghdad. A worker for the Iraqi trade minister was killed in the southern neighborhood of Dora. A municipal worker was wounded in a drive-by shooting. 2 Iraqi soldiers were killed in Mosul, one whose brother was a member of parliament. So this is not like some lumped sum of people that happens just in one event. This place is out of control, Riley.
Well, what you're seeing, Mark, is a continuing series of insurgent attacks against what they see as the most visible aspects of this new Iraqi government. The security forces, the police, government ministers, these are who the insurgents are targeting. Now, the flip side of that is that the Iraqi government apparently has begun an initiative, and we don't know right now whether that initiative involves any coalition troops, but they have something called Operation Thunder that reportedly netted them about 50 suspected insurgents. Now, mind you, that's suspected insurgents, not bona fide insurgents, but they've been going through these sweeps. And it's interesting to me that the reportage is not saying whether American troops are involved.
Yeah.
It would be a significant departure if they were not, because in most instances, these kinds of sweeps, these kinds of raids that have been conducted with the coalition forces out front.
I'm sure there was an advisor there. They would have made it. They would have celebrated this in the paper. They would have said, for the first time ever.
Yeah, right.
You know, Iraqi forces did this by themselves. I would assume that there were some U.S. military advisors. I don't know. I'm not judging. But U.S. forces also killed four insurgents getting ready to blast off a mortar in a neighborhood. It's baffling just how chaotic it is. And one of the scariest things that I read over the evening was that a spokesperson for the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the Shia cleric, who is the driving force behind most of this, certainly the spirituality, but the religiosity, the theocratic movement behind the Shias, the ruling party in Iraq, said basically, he had a spokesman say, the government, he wanted the government to protect the people in, quote, this genocidal war, end quote. So he's saying that the people need to be protected, but he's classifying the war as a genocidal war, which means he's making the assumption or making a statement saying that the Sunni minority is out to, or the Sunni majority.
No, it's Sunni a minority. Minority.
Yeah, the Sunni minority is out to, exterminate the Shia, who are now in control of the country. So he is basically stating that there is a civil war going on, but that's sort of couched in this idea, but we have to protect the people.
Well, you also have to read between the lines of what Sistani is saying here. What Sistani is saying is, look, either you, the government of Iraq, protect the people, or we will organize local militias. Remember we heard that yesterday?
Yeah.
That some Shia were urging the putting together of local militia to fight against these Sunni insurgents. Well, what Sistani's saying is, if the Iraqi government cannot protect the Shia, then the Shia are going to have to protect themselves. And one of the things that you don't hear a great deal of, Mark, and this is something, again, that goes completely under the radar here in the United States. Have you heard about any attacks on the Kurds lately?
No.
Why do you think that is?
Because there aren't any?
No, because they got their own. Oh. Because they have their own militias. They have their own, the Peshmerga, the people that are fighting, not even fighting. They are the people that are protecting the Kurds, and the Sunnis are not going to mess with them. The Peshmerga, by the way, were trained in conjunction with the Israelis.
Wow. That's right. The Israelis helped train them, so they've got to be some pretty...
They're tough, and the Sunnis are not messing with them. They're messing with the Shia because the Shia, as of now, have not fought back in any wholesale fashion, because then the country will be at full-scale civil war. And what Sistani is doing is trying to say to the government, look, you better stop this, because if you don't, then we're going to turn al-Sadr and his people loose, and then there will be a war.
So you see it as a threat.
Absolutely.
I just said before that 88% of New Yorkers stock some emergency supplies in their home. 51% say they have an emergency plan. 55% have a go bag just in case something bad happens. I have a gallon of water and some dough. I got some cash.
You got zucchini bread, man. You last for a month.
But I'll tell you something, man. You know, if anything goes down, God forbid, the highways, I mean, if you really think about it logically, you better have some good shoes and get to walking if you can. What do you put in a go bag? Do you have one? 866-303-2270. Are you prepared? Let us know what your plan is. I got a plan. It's generally to pack up and run. What am I going to do with my three kitties? Am I going to be the guy that's on the street with the shopping cart and the three cats and a gallon of water and some zucchini bread and my wife?
In that order?
I always worry about the cats.
Well, don't you think you should worry about your wife?
Well, she's tough. She'll survive. And I imagine the cats will survive as well. I worry about them all. But mostly, I worry about me. That's not true. That's not
yes,
true. I would take a bullet for my cats. 866-303-2270. And I would take two bullets for my wife. I don't know.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
50 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. We've been talking a little bit about how Bush is caught in the crossfire between the religious right, the neocon death cult. So that would be the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade, the neocon death cult, and the CIA. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little while. Right now, we've got some calls on the line. We're asking people what's in their go bag. Apparently, most people here in New York, 88% of New Yorkers, stock some emergency supplies in their home in case something bad happens. 51% say they have a plan. I got a plan. Run. 88% say they have a go bag of supplies to take with them. You know, what's in your go bag? 866-303-2270. Sometimes it's hard to figure out what the headlines are saying. Thank God for the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's feed it some headlines, my friends. Here we go. From Bloomberg News, Bush says he wants all the facts on leak probe. Bush says he wants all the facts on leak probe. Translation, Bush says he wants all the facts on leak probe to go away. From the Associated Press, RNC raised $59.4 million in first half of the year. RNC raised $59.4 million in first half of year. Translation, GOP raises bail money for Roe delay. From the Chris, either put the full effort into the laugh or just don't just go, "Huh? What is that? What is, huh? What is that? Is that a laugh?"
Be laughing, idiot.
Oh. Oh. All right. From the San Mateo County Times. I'm sorry, buddy. You all right? What are you doing with the iPod? Put it down for a second.
I'm working.
You have a problem.
He's got something he's got going on over there.
From the San Mateo County Times, Disneyland celebrates 50th anniversary in style. Disneyland celebrates 50th anniversary in style. Translation, schlock and awe in Anaheim. that was a good fake laugh. That was really good. Hey, you know, it was so good. Why don't you catch that? All right, come on, folks. We got people on the phone here. Bo, listening to XM in Washington, D.C. What do you got in your go bag, Bo?
What's up?
I did?
Oh, Bo?
I'm sorry. Ed in Los Angeles, what do you got? What do you got in your go bag?
Oh, hey, Ed.
Well, it's not really a bag, but it's 5 gallons of water. It's 60 rubber balls. Hollow rubber balls, and it's a toothbrush, toothpaste, some toilet paper.
Okay, I'd back up.
Snacks.
Hollow rubber balls.
Hollow rubber balls. What do we got going there?
Well, see, we have to prepare for earthquakes out here in Los Angeles, so I have these rubber balls because I have a phobia about ceilings coming down on me, so I don't totally trust this building I'm in because it's kind of old, so I have these. I'm just afraid. And what I do is, if there's a building starts shaking, I'll put this box of balls over my head, and hopefully that'll protect me and protect the ceiling. And if the ceiling does come down, then at least my head won't get smashed. So
yeah. So but
that's genius, man.
That's a pretty. You know what I like about that plan, Ed?
What do you like about it, Mark?
Well, it's right there. It's a good idea. You know, I think that in thinking about what could happen, that it might work in your head, but I don't know how that'll pan out.
I don't know either. No, it's a sentimental thing. Because my dad used to work for the company that made those balls.
Oh! So are these your dad's balls or from the new company?
No, these are from China, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
I do have some old ones that my dad actually made for the company, but I also got some from China, so... You know, because the air goes out of them, so...
Yeah.
You know,
these aren't Spalding's, are they?
What's that?
They're not Spalding's, are they?
I have a couple of Spalding balls.
Oh, okay. Well, those are the ones they use to play stickball here in New York.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Ed, good luck with that. I hope nothing happens where you have to put the balls on your head.
Hey, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks.
Oh, come on. How tempting was that just to go on about balls? Am I wrong? Bo, listening in Washington, D.C. on XM. How are you, buddy?
What's up, Bo?
What do you got in your bag?
Well, being the cosmic conservative that I am,
oh, okay.
I have the universal key. I have a 357 Magnum. That
yeah.
means I can have your zucchini bread, that man's balls. I can have anything I want.
Oh, wow.
It's much lighter than humping gallons of water down the street.
But let's say, okay, so what about the other guy with the two 357 Magnums, and he shoots you? What happened?
I don't have to worry about that because he would be a conservative, because liberals don't carry guns, do they?
Well, there's a couple of liberals that carry guns. There's a couple of guys. My dad's a liberal. He's got a couple of guns. Some people think that it's okay. They believe in the right to protect their homes from people. There's a few of them. You're not
if we have to vacate our cities, it'll be every man for himself, so I'll take my chances.
Did you see War of the Worlds?
I have not.
You should go see that. There's an amazing scene with a guy with a gun who thinks he's got everything figured out until the other guy with the gun blew his head off.
But that's a movie. That's fiction.
Yeah, I know. But it's
in the real world,
people never get shot.
Conservatives take care of themselves.
Wow. And you live in Washington D.C. and you're saying that
he's driving around with a gun. Hey, thanks for your call, Bo. Yeah. Well, you know, there you go. Let's see. We got Joe in Long Island listening on 1190 LIB. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Good morning, guys. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. What's in your go bag, Joe?
I don't know if I can say what's in my go bag, but it comes with go papers, a generator, and a DVD of Family Guy, and I'm just going to sit back and wait.
That's the best plan I had. Just keep your go bag stash away from Bo in D.C. because he's going
to
come in with a gun and take
try
it.
And take it off of you,
What?
You guys are doing fantastic work, man. I just want to say thank you.
You bet, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks
great
for calling.
Talking.
Wow, so we got everybody from a 357 to somebody's got some rolling papers and a Family Guy video.
The box of balls. That takes it for me. Because that's one of those weird things where it's just sort of like, you know, that idea that if you jump right before the elevator hits the ground, you know, if the cables, you know.
I feel like that every time I come up here.
Yeah, but you're not going to do anything. Like, I appreciate that this guy's going to have a box of balls on his head, but you know, depending on how many... You know, floors are going to fall on. It's just like, it's one of those things you put in your brain where it's like, I got to figure it out. If this comes down and I got the balls on my head, you know, I'm going to be all right. You know, because I think about that when I'm on the train underwater, that, you know, that there's some outside chance I'll be able to swim. Like when the tunnel fills with water, that, you know, I can hold my breath and I'm going to make it. So this guy is going to be standing on the street with a box of balls on his head and the building won't fall. That was the biggest fear, is that, you know, when the earthquake is, it's like you're sitting there like, do I put pants on? Because you don't want to be the only guy out in the street naked with balls on your head.
Well,
it's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Any excuse. You know what I'm saying? We're going to come back and talk about real things. So stay with us. That's it.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Good morning. Hope you're having an okay Tuesday. It is Tuesday, isn't it? Tuesday is today. For those of you who are just tuning in here, we'll be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnston will be there to play some music. I haven't heard from him in a while. I remember a few years back he had a couple albums out. I'm looking forward to hearing him play. We're going to give away free stuff. Milf Cardinal Milfington will be there. It's at the Tea Lounge at Park Slope, Brooklyn on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday from 6 to 9. We've been there before. It's a great place to come and watch the show. I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club in New York this weekend. You can go to GothamComedyClub.com for details. If you want to come hang out, I'll just be there doing some stand-up with some other people. For those of you who are just tuning in and you missed what we talked about, it's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. The Civilian Border Protection Group, known as the Minutemen Project, is ramping up efforts in Southern California. According to the Minutemen, California is being swamped by Hispanic culture, and they say they want it stopped. Pronto. The Minutemen may already be having an impact. Observers say the going rate for lawn trimming in West L.A. has gone up $4 in the last week. Oh, boy. Olympic bomber Eric Rudolph gets life in prison for blowing up an abortion clinic. Rudolph's sentencing brings back a simpler day of domestic terrorism when we, America, didn't have to rely on imported bombers. Nothing? All right. He'll be getting life, which is possible the first time. It's possibly the first time I agree with the whole right to life thing.
Nothing? Not even a ha from Kayla? Nothing? Really? These are, maybe we should just stop doing these jokes, man. They crapped out on me, too, last week on Friday, you know, live. A new production.
That's
what?
Funnier than the actual jokes. All
what?
Right? You're saying how bad the jokes are.
Yeah. They're not bad, but maybe they're just not, they don't have the little zing at the end. How about this one? A new production. These guys work, we're putting together jokes here for people. All right. A new production of Shakespeare's Richard III has turned the title character into Saddam Hussein. The most memorable scene, Saddam wanders on stage in his underwear screaming, yellow cake, my kingdom for yellow cake. Ugh. Come on, man. Now you're not laughing on purpose just because you want to see me flail around. Is that what's going on over there, Kayla? I understand, man.
I love the writers, by the way.
Yeah, I understand, buddy. I understand.
They're very good guys.
Huh?
Oh, wow.
Oh. How's your iPod sickness? Oh! Sorry, I just threw the thing at him. You all right? You hooked up to the iPod? My wife's addicted to online poker. Online poker, she's addicted to Tetris. Any free moment, my wife is playing a game of some kind.
And you know, you can play solitaire on your iPod.
I'm playing it right now.
Uh-oh.
I don't even need an iPod. I got solitaire in my brain. I'm just turning over cards. I've never been a solitaire guy. I don't play those games. I have enough problems just, playing. In my head, it's just constantly Space Invaders. Just
you don't ever want to just escape and, play some games?
I'm doing it right now with you, I feel. I feel that we've got a little tension, a little mind game going. Let's get to the news, man. So Bush is tweaking his statement, his avoidance, I'm not even going to call it denial. I'll call it stonewalling. I think this guy is in on protecting this leaker. I think he knows. He knows exactly what happened, maybe in as nuanced a way as he should, but he's definitely, what kind of president does that? What kind of, everyone else is talking about it. Well, what kind of president gets out there and says, I'm not going to comment until the investigator comments?
Well, this is probably the only president, certainly in my memory, where you could sit there and honestly think maybe he didn't know. I mean, the president of the United States is supposed to know. That's his job. When you're talking about people leaking the names of CIA agents, when you're talking about the possibility of people in your inner circle talking to reporters about this kind of sensitive information, as Bob Schieffer, who we played last hour, pointed out, you're supposed to get your inner circle together and say, it's time for some truth here. For some reason, that appears not to have happened with this president.
Well, if he does know, in which he probably, I believe that he does know. And I believe that there's just too much at stake. I believe that that Karl Rove said, look, here's what happened. That's the truth. Now go out there and lie because I'm indispensable here. I think that's what happened. And we'll hear how he is, equivocated, how he's changed his statement from a year ago. Let's hear the one from June 10, 2004. This is Bush with a reporter in reference to the leaker.
I think it's best that people wait until the investigation is complete before
This is from yesterday.
You jump to conclusions. And I will do so as well. I don't know all the facts. I want to know all the facts. The best place for the facts to be done is by somebody who's spending time investigating it. I would like this to end as quickly as possible so we know the facts. And if someone committed a crime, they will no longer work in my administration.
Okay, if someone committed a crime, they will no longer work in my administration. That's actually from yesterday. Sorry about the mix-up. Let's hear the one from June 10, 2004.
Given recent developments in the CIA leak case, particularly Vice President Cheney's discussions with investigators, do you still stand by what you said several months ago, suggestion that it might be difficult to identify anybody who leaked the agent's name, do you stand by your pledge to fire anyone found to have done so?
Yes, and that's up to the U.S. attorney to find the facts.
So, yes, so he will fire anybody who leaked it. Now it's anyone who committed a crime. That's a very different thing, given that all of this is based on legalese and semantics, and they're playing a game here. They're playing a game of protecting who's inside of this administration that did this, and they're not being honest with the American people. And let's not mistake what this is about. This is not just about a leak. This is not just about Karl Rove, the cave fish. This is about a war that was, you know, gone into on false pretenses, on lies, and this is about someone calling this administration, the neocon death cult, out on a lie and them taking revenge, organized revenge that probably, you know, a lot of them probably knew about, as Riley was talking about earlier, Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby. There might be an entire culture of subversion and covert action of revenge to basically threaten, coerce people into buying these lies.
Well, see, I still can't figure out. I listened very closely to what the president said yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an amazing sleight of hand for this man to sit up and say, well, I don't know all the facts. Now, this obviously involves people in his inner circle. So for you to say, well, I don't have all the facts, is at the very best case scenario disingenuous. The fact is, you should have all the facts. You shouldn't be relying on a United States attorney. You are the president of the United States. You're talking about your people, and you don't have the facts?
Exactly.
Why not?
Unless somebody's leaving him standing with the bag, or unless he's lying for somebody. Of course, he's got to have the facts. You're absolutely right, man. I mean, why the hell doesn't he have the facts? How can the president of the United States get up there when they're talking about his own administration and say, well, we're going to have to wait till the investigator finds out? Dude, walk down the hall.
Yep.
And ask around a little bit. Don't you trust these people? Who's in charge over there? You know, and in terms of the way the media captured this, he's just avoiding it, you know, because he is working for somebody else. And it's not the people of this country. He's working for the neocon death cult, the cabal that is in charge. And he's trying to, you know, he's trying to make a run for the children's table again. And he's trying to, you know, come out smelling like roses or disperse the blame. But you're right, though, man. If you just really think about this, that what's under investigation is a guy who's literally down the hall from where he's standing,
yeah.
He's going, we're going to have to wait till all the facts come in.
I don't know. Look, this is classic.
Aren't you in charge of that?
This is classic three-card Monty, the way they used to play it back in the day right here in New York. Who's got the red? Who's got the black?
And here's what's interesting that you're not hearing on the TV a lot is that the CIA instigated this investigation. The CIA got this ball rolling. The CIA got, you know, John Ashcroft in the Justice Department to investigate this leak. So John Ashcroft apparently recused himself. Got someone else, an underling, to appoint
Fitzgerald
to this grand jury investigation. So this makes it a little thicker. Is what's happening here is this is an old war between the neocon death cult and the CIA. The CIA took the fall for 9/11 information. They also took the fall for the information that led up to the war because they were nailed on it. And they were bullied by this administration, by the neocon death cult, to give them the information they needed to go to war, even though that information was half-baked. Joe Wilson called them on it, so they outed Valerie Plame. Now the CIA is taking a shot at them. So Bush is caught in the middle between the CIA and the neocon death cult, and then coming up around the side is the Christo-fascist zombie brigade saying, you better nominate somebody who's going to make abortion illegal or we're leaving.
Yeah, that is exactly the corner that this president has painted himself into. And consider for a moment, folks, the fact that the CIA almost never confirms or denies anything. They usually stonewall any kinds of questions about what they do. Yet they were very public in asking, even though it hasn't been widely reported, they were public in asking for this special prosecutor.
Yeah, it's weird because he is a lame duck president now. And I'll tell you what, no matter what happens, the neocon death cult has gotten away with not only with, you know, thousands of murders, gotten away with murder, literally, but they have pillaged Iraq. They have made fortunes for their friends. They have changed legislation that completely, is in support of corporate oligarchy, you know, in at the cost of people who are just regular working people. They've made a lot of progress for the evil bastards that they are. They can cut Bush loose. They can all cut Bush loose. Bush is over. You know, it's the survival of the ideology and the political survival of Karl Rove that these idiots are really concerned about. And the public's not buying it. Only 25% of the people in this country think that the president's being honest. What's that? Is that a tape from Lawton? Well, we got another Lawton Smalls tape from Iraq, so that's coming up next, and also more information about this battle between the neocon death cult, the CIA, and the Christo-fascist zombie brigade coming up around the side. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Ryan. Friday on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Two past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. It's Tuesday morning. We got, you know, Lawton Smalls is stuck in Iraq with the Truth Tour. Well, the Truth Tour that they kicked him off of. The Truth Tour, of course, the fourth and fifth tier radio personalities being organized out of California by Melanie Morgan, a sort of, you know, kind of like unnoticeable loudmouth that apparently has a radio show out there. But the Truth Tour was essentially a bunch of right-wing, like, radio people went to Iraq to get to the real truth. And Lawton was Air America's representative on the Truth Tour. And they cut him loose. And then he got apparently kidnapped by some, I don't know if they were insurgents or just kidnappers looking to sell him, apparently is more like the case. But we do have another tape from him. I think he, you know... we've got people, we're trying to put the money together, but it's too much money. But let's hear Lawton Smalls from the, it's a hostage tape from Iraq.
Is this on? Okay. People of America, this is Lawton Smalls. Hi, how y'all doing? All right, I'm getting to it. Hold your horses. Okay. I am a CIA agent and a puppet of the great Satan, George W. Two terms mandate Bush. I'm going to keep saying that, okay? Do I have to read this? All right. He is a buffoon and a failure, blah, 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 blah. Your illegal occupation of Iraq is a doom. Man, I sound like Ted Kennedy.
Oh,
I do.
Man.
You are running out of troops and money. Okay, y'all need to rewrite this because people are going to tune out. I'm a radio professional, I know. You're going to have to sex this up a little. All right, put down the hose. I'm reading. Infidels, you must send 50 million. Huh? 20 million.
50 million. Wow.
10 million. Are you okay? $10 million in small unmarked bills to the address on the package, or I, Lawton Small, CIA agent, puppet of the great Satan, will be executed. Though I got to tell you, mostly these boys just sit around and smoke. I'll probably die of boredom first. Okay, wait. Hang on. I'm not done. There is no God but God. We're still together on that one. Salam alaikum. Deal with it. Thank you. Could I get a lemonade or something?
Well,
y'all got any diet Sprite?
Oh boy, he's got to be annoying them. So I, you know, perhaps he'll be back. I don't know what's going on. He doesn't sound as uncomfortable as he should in that situation. Am I wrong, Riley?
No, you're absolutely. I hope they don't like. I'm hoping maybe they do just cut him loose because he just seems to be of little or no value to him or anybody else for that matter.
We'll see what happens. Look, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay and House Speaker Denny Hastert have done everything they could to hurt veterans even more than they already are hurt if they are injured when they come home, despite the fact that they were warned over a year ago that the government would come up short by at least $750 million for veterans' health care. They did nothing but fire the guys who told them the truth. Is that what's going on here, Riley?
That is what's going on here. That came from Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He was at that time chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and it turned out that he was right. DeLay and Hastert were wrong. DeLay and Hastert, in fact, engineered his removal as chair of that committee. But Chris Smith, to his credit, is holding no grudges, saying essentially he's not going to do the I told you so thing, so we'll do it for him. The fact is, these people were told, and we're talking now about veterans that are coming home from Iraq, veterans that are coming home from Iraq, and some of them are finding that it is difficult to access the health care that all soldiers are promised when they go in.
And it's going to be more difficult if they don't find the money they need for this program, because now they've put together a little coalition of Republicans that are trying to figure out, they're scrambling. They made a tremendous mistake, and this is directly relatable to Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert. I mean, these guys said no because they wanted to spend the money elsewhere. Now that they're coming up close to $1 billion short on veterans' health care, and they got to scramble to find the money because these idiots don't care. They don't care about the troops in the field. They don't care about the ones coming home, and now either
They're going to have to ration off health care. They're going to have sort of stateside triage and make these guys wait forever to get treatment. Or they're going to have to raise the copay because Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay did not want to allocate the proper amount of money to take care of our veterans when they're injured.
You know, $250 million of the shortfall, and the Bush administration is now putting it at $1.2 billion, apparently is attributed to soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. The VA predicted 23,000. They are now getting 103,000, almost five, actually almost, yeah, just about five times as many.
Mm. That's a it's a sad truth. Coming up next, we've got Ed Hopkins, director of the Sierra Club's Environmental Quality Program. He's going to tell us about MTBE. You know what that is? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's bad, and it's manufactured in Tom DeLay's district. How do you like that? We've also got the Liberal Confessional. So stay with us. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We got the Liberal Confessional coming up in just a few minutes. Hey, folks. If the House Energy Bill, passes, energy companies that have knowingly produced a dangerous chemical that has contaminated water supplies across the country will be off the hook. Even worse, U.S. taxpayers will pay to clean this stuff up. Fortunately, it's not too late to do something about it. Congress is working on a compromise bill as we speak. Here to tell us more about this issue and what you can do is the director of the Sierra Club's Environmental Quality Program, Ed Hopkins. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on your show.
Good morning, Ed.
Great to have you. What is MTBE and how does it get into our water?
Well, MTBE is a chemical that oil companies began to add to gasoline back in the late 70s. And it gets in our water when it leaks out of underground storage tanks and gets into the groundwater and then migrates to our drinking water wells.
So this is this chemical has been around since the late 70s, and this has also been sort of a sticker, a hinge in the energy bill for years, right?
Yes. In the House, Majority Leader Tom DeLay has been an advocate for holding oil companies harmless for the contamination caused by MTBE, and the Senate has rejected that approach. And in the last Congress, that difference between the House and the Senate blocked the energy bill from passing. And right now, we're in pretty much the same position where the House and Tom DeLay are pushing this legislation to let the oil companies off the hook for the contamination they've caused, and the Senate is still resistant to that.
Now, Ed, MTBE is supposedly in 1,800 local water supplies. That's a lot of leakage. What's being done about that?
Well, basically, local water suppliers are trying to hold oil companies responsible for that. They're taking them to court, and they're forcing them to pay the cleanup costs. And what the House legislation is designed to do is protect the oil companies from lawsuits from the water suppliers.
So what does this stuff do to you if you drink it over time?
Well, even at very low levels, MTBE ruins the water supply because it makes it taste and smell a lot like turpentine.
Wow.
But according to the EPA, just a couple of weeks ago, they released a draft risk assessment which contends that MTBE is a likely human carcinogen.
Wow. So they assume this is at the most can give you cancer, at the least make your water taste like paint thinner.
Yes.
That's bad.
Yes.
That's incredible.
That is bad. And what's particularly bad is that the cleanup costs for MTBE, which are estimated at about $30 billion, and the water suppliers say that cost could be as high as $85 billion.
So now let me ask you, that Tom DeLay, the reason why he's so pro-MTBE is because I'm assuming it's being made in his district and in his state. What's his connection to it intimately?
Yes, there are a couple of manufacturers of MTB in his district, and of course, Tom DeLay is a spokesperson basically for the oil industry,
right,
in Texas. And that's why he's so adamant about pushing for this special interest break in the energy bill.
Now, Ed, if they took MTB out of gasoline, would that create a pollution problem in terms of it, of the fuel not burning that cleanly anymore?
No, because cars basically don't need oxygenates any like MTBE anymore to run cleanly. And even back when Congress said that oil companies should add oxygenates, and there are oxygenates other than MTBE that the oil industry could have used, the oil industry knew that MTBE was a persistent toxic chemical. And they used this chemical even knowing the ill effects that it would have.
So they use it primarily because the production facilities are in place, they're making money with it, there's politics involved, they just don't care about the health costs of it enough to take it out.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And to add insult to injury, another provision of the energy bill would give oil companies transition assistance to essentially wean them off from manufacturing MTBE. And that would amount to, in the House bill, $2 billion, and in the Senate bill, $1 billion.
Well,
so in other words, we the taxpayers, would be paying oil companies not to produce a toxic chemical that has contaminated our drinking water.
Man, they've got us coming and going, Ed.
They do. They do.
Our guest
is... that's a good reason not to pass an energy bill that is essentially an energy policy for the 19th century.
Our guest is Ed Hopkins, director of the Sierra Club's Environmental Quality Program. Ed, what can our listeners do to get involved in this fight against this stuff?
Well, what people can do is tell their elected representatives, senators particularly, to stand firm against giving the oil companies a huge bailout for their contamination of our water supplies.
Okay, well, there you go, Air America radio listeners. Get in touch with your state representatives and make some noise about this. In closing, sort of shift gears a little bit, there's been some reports that the FBI has been monitoring websites, you know, of protest organizations and of organizations that are against this administration in order to, you know, sort of deem them terrorists. Is this a concern for the Sierra Club in any way?
Well, we certainly operate within the framework of the existing laws. We are not a terrorist organization, but we do have a lot of concerns about how this administration has treated our environment and treated the public health.
Mm-hmm.
So we would not want to be investigated just for working to protect the environment and protecting people's health.
Well, that's what I mean. I certainly know you're not a terrorist organization.
Well, thank you.
I was just trying to get a lot of information into one question. Thank you for being with us, Ed Hopkins.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Okay,
thanks,
great. Yeah, that's funny. By no means is the Sierra Club a terrorist organization. But the issue is that they are now lumping those things. They are lumping together, you know, groups that actually do, you know, organized dissent or organized criticism or organized reach-out work, you know, that the administration may not agree with, and they investigate them under the Patriot Act, you know, under the anti-terrorism bills, and they, you know, and they can classify them. Like,
oh, yeah, and remember, Mark, there was an investigation that was done on behalf of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that labeled Chuck Hagel from Nebraska a liberal.
Yeah.
So is it a great leap to think that maybe the Sierra Club might get branded as a terrorist organization by this administration?
No, sir. You know, but speaking of that, Riley, speaking about liberals and being a liberal, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm feeling a little guilty. Over the weekend, I had an encounter with a little person.
A little person?
You know, and don't make me say the M word. It was a little person, you know, short. I'm talking like, you know, 3'6 here.
So the guy was short. So what?
Well, you know that original reaction you have when you see one of them?
Oh, no. What did you do?
No, nothing really bad. I mean, you know, I tamped it down. I switched over into meeting regular-sized person mode right away. But that first split second, I know I had that look on my face, Riley.
What look?
You know, it's that kind of look of, you know, wonder and excitement, that, like, that sort of I'm at the circus look. The Oompa Loompa Wizard of Oz look. You know, that, hey, neat, there's a little doll person look. And you just, you know that they see that because they get it all day long, Riley.
So you recovered from the initial look, right?
Of course. But then now I'm worried that I overcompensated, you know. I was like, hey, what's going on? And then I was like, hey, man, what's up? I'm sure, I shook his hand. I just know that they know about the overcompensating thing, too. You know what I'm saying?
How exactly did you overcompensate, Mark?
I gave my phone number. I said we should hang out sometime. I said I'd help him move. I said, that if he needs help, I said that I could help him with anything. I said, I think I said I'll read his novel, and it's like 800 pages or something.
Okay, I see where you're going, and I think I have your penance.
Okay, hit me, Riley.
You have to do all the stuff you told the little person you'd do.
All of it?
Yep. You have to help him move, read his novel, and explore whether or not you can have a friendship with this person without thinking of him as a novelty.
I bet he has cute little furniture.
Stop it!
All right, sorry.
Stop!
All right.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. You know, their hands are really small.
Right? Come on!
I'm sorry, buddy. Well, thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. It looks like the confession booth is already filled. We will be back with your sins next.
Join the morning sedition.
Right now,
call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're in the middle of our confessional segment, our liberal confessional. The booth is open, 866-303-2270. We've got some sinners on the line, Riley.
Yeah.
Steve in Connecticut, listening to WLIB. What is your sin, my friend?
Well, hi, how are you guys doing?
I'm good, Steve.
Well, last week I got on the train for my commute home, and the only available seat was behind these two Arab-looking dudes, and I didn't think much about it, so I went and took the seat, but then as I walked right past them, I saw them communicating to each other in sign language. And so then that got me thinking, oh, maybe there's some secret code language, maybe they're terrorists, maybe they're going to blow up the train, what should I do, but would they blow up the train? Then I'm starting thinking their strategy. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking of myself getting blown up into tiny little bits and catching on fire, and that kind of hurt. And so I just started really freaking myself out with all this paranoia. And then I'm like, is it worth it? Should I take it? Should I take a hit? Blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, I'm getting mad at the guy sitting next to them because this big musclehead Aryan-looking dude, because he's giving them shifty glances. And while I'm freaking out about these guys, he's giving them glances. I'm getting mad at him. And it was all too much to bear. I just got up and left the car and went on to another car and then started feeling really guilty.
You know, Steve, I got to be honest with you. I actually talk about this on stage a bit, and I've been exactly the same situation because I live in Queens. There's a very big Muslim community there, and I too have surrendered to that fear. I've surrendered to the innate racism within that comes from fear. So you should feel ashamed because the odds are certainly against you, but there's no reason why, you know, you shouldn't judge yourself for having those feelings. Fear is fear. But I think what you're going to have to do, for penance, I think you're going to have to
learn sign language so you communicate with deaf Arabs.
Yeah, if that's a no, I think, Steve, I think you're going to have to do some more reach out. I think you're going to have to go to
I wish you. Maybe you should go to. Where do you live in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Man, I was going to say you could go to one of these Egyptian coffee shops in my neighborhood and sit down and talk politics so you can maybe understand that most Muslims are not like that. But I think
Maybe the next time I'm at Shea Stadium, I'll head over there.
Yeah, okay, so the next time you're at Shea Stadium being frightened of Arabs, you should come to my, leave in the seventh inning and come to my neighborhood, and we'll go to Steinway Street and we'll sit down and we'll talk to some moderate Muslims, because I'm pretty sure there are some over there.
That'd probably be very therapeutic.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, I'm glad I could help out. I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to. But believe me, I've had the same feelings. And the funny thing about it, though, Steve, is that you don't get off the trade altogether, all right? You just go to another car. So there's still some...
Well, those things are well built, man.
Yeah, I know, but there's still some part of you. There's some part of you that thinks if anything happens, like, I won't get killed, but maybe something bad will happen, but it'll probably just be punishment for me surrendering to my fear.
But maybe I felt like I could be the hero and help people who did survive, you know?
I didn't hear that in your confession, Steve.
I'm sorry.
I just heard the part where you're so concerned about yourself blowing into bits that you had to move. Was there more to it?
No, I made that up at the end.
All right. Thanks for calling, buddy. Take care. All right.
And you got to figure the guys didn't blow up the train, did they?
No, of course not. Oh, but I know that one. I know that one. All right. Let's Claudine in Manhattan listening to WLIB. What is your sin, Claudine?
Hey, Claudine.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What is it? How can I be of assistance?
I'm a smoker. I'm an ex-smoker. I'm a registered nurse, and I really like Bloomberg because of the smoking ban.
Wow. Ex-smoker, a registered nurse, and you like Bloomberg because of the smoking ban.
Right.
Well, wow, is there a sin there? You like Bloomberg.
You like a Republican guy, is that it?
Exactly.
You know he's an ex-smoker, too.
Pretty face.
You know that. He's an ex-smoker.
Well, that makes sense.
Brendan's all worked up.
Uh-oh.
Brendan P.W. McDonald just came in. What happened? What
do you... I think he may have a double secret special penance for you.
Well, I got a little upset in the booth there because
Whoa.
Sorry about the feedback there, guys. I got a little upset in the booth there because I had the same issue with myself that I'm not a smoker. I didn't, I don't like smoke in bars and that. And I was really happy when that first happened.
Yeah.
And when I thought about it and I saw the favorite bars that I liked going out of business because they couldn't afford to stay open anymore, I was angry at myself. Why did I support that? You know, that this is a free society thing.
Oh, my
God.
We
should be able to make the choices that we're able to make, you know? You don't want to go into a smoky bar, you don't go into it.
All right, but, okay, a bar is one thing, but you shouldn't be able to smoke in a hospital.
you guys, I got to interject you. This is Dan.
Oh, no, Dan Pashman.
This is, first of all, the idea that any bars went out of business because of the smoking ban is tobacco company propaganda.
No, that's not true, Dan. You don't know. Bar owners.
Bar owners are all paid off
that's
by
bull.
Tobacco companies. The restaurant owners are the
I'm
bad
swear
guys.
I'm on the
here.
Air.
Let's just deal with Claudine for a second, and,
yeah,
then,
really.
And then we'll
it's
continue.
Her sin, after
we'll,
all.
We'll deal with the conversation.
Sorry, go on, Claudine.
You shouldn't like Bloomberg for this reason necessarily.
No.
You shouldn't vote for him for this reason. But what is the penance?
She has to open a bar, and have something at the bar that lots of people like, lots of her customers, and then halfway through, opening the bar, take it away and still try to keep the bar open once all those people leave.
Beer nuts.
Yeah, I think that's what she has to do. She has to open a place with the lure of a particular thing, and once all the people start coming and spending their money because of that particular thing, then she should take it away and tell everybody that they can't do it.
Claudine, did you have that kind of money to put a down payment on a bar at the time?
I have about $4. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You got enough for a liquor license?
There you go.
They're not cheap in this town.
So now we have to finish this conversation that you started. So that's your penance. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
I think Dan is confused here because he doesn't like smoke like me, and he's happy to go into bars and not walk out smelling like an ashtray, which is cool, but it is not. It's not a good use of government for one guy to say that we should just not have smoking in any place.
I'm not
a smoker.
I think that you should be able to smoke in bars. Absolutely. Absolutely, and I think you're underestimating the lure of alcohol. I see plenty of people smoking outside, and you can certainly take a break within drinks. But, man, if I were still smoking cigarettes, though, and still drinking for that matter, if I couldn't sit there and smoke while I drank my Jack Daniels, I'd be really pissed. I can't even imagine what it's like.
I'm sure that's true, but I just generally believe that, that with a specific issue of smoking in public places and of tobacco companies,
but it's a private place.
All other rules get thrown out the window.
But it's a private place, Dan. It's somebody's establishment. They should be able to choose whether or not that happens. They shouldn't have government telling them that this is the way it has to be, because one guy is a reformed smoker, and that's the worst. A reformed smoker who thinks that he knows better than other people. And you know what? I might even vote for Bloomberg. I'm not decided yet. Yeah. I have to see these Democratic candidates step up. But that is one thing that pissed me off.
The smoker that hates you for being able to enjoy what he can't do
exactly.
anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
The only thing worse than that is people who are still smoking who are angry at their friends who've quit smoking and try to tempt them back into smoking.
How about the people that are still smoking and angry at themselves for being stupid?
Is that you?
What about that guy? The guy who's sitting there taking a drag going, what is wrong with me?
I think Bloomberg missed an important opportunity. He could have made a bunch of money franchising smoking bars.
That would have worked.
Yeah, but they can still do that. Why can't they still do that?
No, they have to be grandfathered in.
Oh, man. All right, so when we come back, let's talk about George W. Bush and the crossfire between the CIA, the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade, and the neocon death cult. It's Air America Radio, 57 Pass.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's right, it's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. You're listening to Air America Radio. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
We started something.
Yeah, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, Brendan Peterman McDonald, are still fighting from the last segment that we had that was inspired by a caller who called to confess that she likes Mike Bloomberg for initiating the smokers ban. She's an ex-smoking nurse. And, man, P.W. McDonald comes in here livid, like, no, you tell her to open a bar where they have things that people like and then tell them right in the middle of it that they can't have them anymore and try to stay in business. And Pashman's saying that they're still fighting. They're having a hard time listening to me. I just interrupted Dan yelling at Brendan again. I'm an ex-smoker. And me too. But I couldn't believe how passionate. Brendan's like explosive. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like you never know when it's going to happen either. And it doesn't happen that often. But, boy, his head was about to pop off.
Well, you know, there is one single place in New York that caters specifically to cigarette smokers.
Yeah.
That was grandfathered in because the way
the staircase over here?
No. Well, yeah, that too. But there's a place, I can't remember the name, it's in Lower Manhattan, and it's the one place where cigarette as opposed to cigar smokers, because a lot of places would still allow cigar smoking, but, you know, cigar smokers look down on cigarette smoking.
Yeah, it's a trickle-down thing, but I'll tell you, I've been off of the cigarettes for almost 5 years. I am smoking an occasional cigar, but not because I'm a cigar snob, it's because I'm an addict. I'm addicted to nicotine. But I the thought of not being able to smoke, I understand both sides of the argument, because there's part of me that knows that as a smoker, as someone who smoked for like 20 years, that it's nothing but bad. It's just nothing but bad. I don't care what you say. It makes you calm. It makes you hyper. You do it to relax. Whatever it is, it's bad. And eventually, it's going to make you sick. No way around it. My wife still smokes, and it's almost impossible. I'm jealous of her to a degree, but I also know that after you smoke for 20 years, there's no way you can do it and actually sit there and say to yourself, nothing is going wrong. Nothing is happening bad in me.
You are in New York City, which has got a very tough smoking law. You have a house in California, which has some of the toughest smoke, and the first state to have very tough smoking laws. I mean, if you want to smoke, you got to go to, like, Montana or Idaho or someplace.
But I also believe in dens of iniquity. I also believe in vice. I believe that people should have the freedom to go somewhere and do what they need to do to blow off steam, to have that time to engage in those habits and those things that they want to get them the relief, as long as it's relatively legal.
Legalized prostitution?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Porn?
I don't have a problem with that.
You said you had a problem with porn before.
I have a problem with it because... I don't. It comes and goes. You know what I'm saying?
There we go. But, we better go to the news. Speaking of coming. No, I'm only kidding.
No, the thing I have a problem with, I think, is what's at the core of porn is, you know, a lot of times desperate, you know, people that are, you know, sold into slavery, some of them. You don't know where it's coming from. I think there's a lot of pain on the screen, my friend, one way or the other. Whatever you're doing in relation to that stuff that's going on in front of you, you know, at the core of it is some severely hurt, broken, screwed up people. I'm saying 95% of the time. I don't want any emails from empowered feminists saying, hey, you can't judge all sex workers like that. I can judge most of them like that. So somehow or another.
You read Lex McNeil's book, didn't you?
No, I didn't yet.
I did, and yeah. It changed my whole view of the business end of it.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it's
man.
It's disturbing, right?
Well, yeah, because it struck me at a point as if people kind of fell into it, and then they fell into something that it ended up being like way over their head.
Okay, yeah, exactly. It's like it was an idea that seemed like, hey, we're all having a good time. And then it went bad. Okay, so we will shift gears here. We will talk about the president. Apparently, only a quarter of Americans think Bush is cooperating in the leak probe. That means 75% of the people polled say that Bush is basically lying. He's stonewalling. He's acting like he doesn't know. This is the president of the United States saying, we're going to have to wait till the investigator figures out what happened. It's down the hall, man. Just walk down the hall and ask around a little bit. See, what we have been assuming here and what we will set up in the next few minutes, hopefully, is that Bush is stuck. He's guilty, but he's stuck. Rove is guilty of treason, but there's a climate, there's a cabal within the administration, the neocon death cult, that involves Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Paul Wolfowitz, who is not there in-house anymore, Donald Rumsfeld, that there is a cabal there that possibly had set up a sort of covert, you know, sort of subversive environment where they said anybody that goes against what we want to do in this planet, the neoconservative agenda, to force American power everywhere at the cost of civil rights, human rights, whatever it takes, America should be, you know, should own the world militarily and otherwise. Anyone who stands in the way of that is going down. If this plane leak was part of that agenda, then it's a lot bigger and a lot deeper than we thought.
And see, when we look at this neocon agenda, and we look at the religious right agenda, which we'll talk about also, the one thing that they have in common is the notion that they know better. Okay, they know better than Americans what America ought to be doing. They know better than the Iraqis what the Iraqis should be doing. They know better, and as Americans, they feel it is their right to exert this kind of hegemony. With the fall of the Soviet Union, America is the only superpower left in the country. So now this is how they decide that America should go. And what they're saying is, look, we will brook no criticism. We will brook no dissent. And you're right, Mark. George W. Bush could have put all of these guys in a room. He could have stood up. He could have slammed his hand down on the table and said, look, I want to know. I'm not waiting for any Patrick Fitzgerald from Chicago. I want to know. I'm the president. You all tell me. And, you know, it's a fairly simple thing that people in families do this all the time. You know, if you got four kids and one of your kids messes up, And, you know, none of them want to say, well, you punish all of them until they do say.
Well, that's what's happening, except that George Bush is the kid.
Yep.
And he is being punished. He's going to be left with holding the bag because, see, this neocon death cult, he made an agreement with them, which makes him guilty. He also made he paid lip service to making an agreement with the religious right. But on this side, let's stick with the side of the neocon death cult. He knew that there was a climate of subversive, covert coercion going on. He knew that Cheney and his team were bullying the CIA to give them the intelligence that they needed to go to war. And once that intelligence was called into question by Joe Wilson and by the truth, you know, these guys went into attack mode. Bush knew that they were going to do that. Whether he knew the nuances of how it was going to happen, I don't know, but he knew. That means he's guilty on that front. Now, what happened there is that the CIA, after taking the hit for 9/11 and also taking the hit on this yellow cake uranium stuff, you know, they are pissed off. And now that they've moved half the intelligence operations into the Pentagon under Rumsfeld's watch and Rumsfeld's money, they're pissed off at the neocon death cult. So they initiated this investigation with the federal prosecutor and the grand jury, with Fitzgerald investigating the leak. So that means that's where Bush is stuck, between neocon death cult and the CIA. Then around the flank comes the religious right, who are now saying, you've got a nomination coming up for a Supreme Court justice. You better deliver our guy. We want abortion to be illegal everywhere. And if you don't do that, we're leaving the party, which they never leave. They're going to be hung out to dry. But I think Bush is as well, too. But I'm not letting Bush off the hook. I think he's guilty.
Well, he is in between the proverbial rock and the hard place. The social conservatives are nipping at his heels, and they are threatening to take their wrath out on elected officials in Bush's own party who are up for re-election next year. They are going to start inserting their own people. Remember, Mark, at the root of this evangelical conservatism, political conservatism, is putting people in key positions, whether they be in federal regulatory agencies or local school boards. Little by little, bit by bit, yep, they start moving up that little ladder, and next thing you know, they're going to be electing, as far as they're concerned, a majority of the Congress.
Right, and Bush knew, and he knows that he wouldn't be in the White House if it weren't for the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade, all right? So they don't like Alberto Gonzalez, who was suggested as a nominee, and they feel like they're getting stiffed because Bush, you know, he gives good meeting, but his policy is not exactly what they want. Because think about it, Riley. Abortions are still readily available with very few legal restrictions. The gay rights debate has moved from employment discrimination to marriage equality. Porno is more available and accessible than ever. The Ten Commandments were just thrown out of the courthouse in Kentucky. I mean, the religious right is feeling like, hey, where's ours? I don't get it. They see themselves as the only conservative faction that hasn't received their just desserts. The economic conservatives got their big tax cuts, and neoconservatives got their war, and the religious conservatives feel like they've been left out.
Left out for the last quarter century. This is not just starting with George W. Bush.
Well, that's a good thing about belief, is that they'll continue believing even if you don't service their needs.
Yeah, but you know what's going to happen? Mark, they're going to start to raise the bar. They're not going to get fooled after George W. Bush by another George W. Bush, because Bush is really just at this point paying lip service, and they're starting to realize it.
So there you go. Man-child George W. Bush, who knew everything, knows everything that's going on, is now stuck in a crossfire between the religious right, the Christo Zombie Brigade, and the neocon death cult, the cabal that created the subtext of this administration, which is subversion, secrecy, blame dispersal, and the CIA. And all he can say is, hey, we're going to have to wait. I don't know. That's the president talking. You know, he is screwed. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to talk about London. And we're going to talk about, the future of the Democratic Party.
Morning's Edition on the air and online. Morning'sEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. And what a program it's been, I might add. It's been a pretty good Tuesday, actually. Hope you're having a good Tuesday. Hope you're getting all jacked up on your caffeinated beverage of choice.
That's right. And arguing with your friends and family about smoking.
Man, I think I make that zucchini bread. You know, sometimes I'll bake things because I like to bake things, you know, occasionally, because it centers me. It's meditative, might add. And if I could call this, I was talking about this earlier, like cookbooks, hippie cookbooks always have those stupid names of Captain Farty's stir fry. But anyways, the Captain Farty hippie stir fry. But this zucchini bread, I think I actually make them, Kalo, if I could talk to you too, because I know you had a piece and you enjoyed it. I make them so I can have one piece. So when I bring stuff in here and you guys don't eat it, that means that piece is talking to me now. So you already have my one piece. I've actually had 7 of them. So why don't you go ahead and eat that? Because I just bake it to see if I can and to see if it tastes good and then move on.
And I got to say,
yeah,
the second slice, much better than the first slice.
There you go. So that third one's got your name on it, too. So enjoy that. Folks, let's shift right from zucchini bread into Iraq.
Oh, Lord.
I'm kidding. That's wrong. It's wrong of me. Let's ease into Iraq. Let's do it that way. Let's start with London and then ease into the realities of Iraq. The Royal Institute of International Affairs put out a report that basically said Britain's support of the U.S. in the war had put them at a greater risk for terrorist attacks. This, of course, talking about the July 7th bombings. The report said that the war had boosted recruitment and fundraising for Al-Qaeda, which is suspected of being behind the attacks that happened a couple weeks back. The government's response was delivered by Jack Straw, and then they took a poll that two-thirds of British people believe there is a link between Tony Blair's decision to invade Iraq and the London bombings, despite government claims to the contrary, which is interesting. That means that, you know, British people are linking terrorism in America.
Oh, yeah.
And then clearly that's what's happening in Iraq, too, that we, you know, there wasn't any connection between Iraq and terrorism, but now there is a connection between Iraq and terrorism, and it's because of America in some level.
Well, what it means is that Tony Blair's government has not been able to convince the British people, even the British people, by the way, who voted to keep him in office not that long ago, but they still have not convinced the British people that there is not a link between bad things happening and this war in Iraq. Now, obviously, people could not have foreseen the tragedy on July 7th, but the bottom line here, Mark, is that people are saying, look, we should not have been in there in the first place. Other than the United States, Britain is the most visible participant in that coalition of the, what did Bush call them? The coalition of the willing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we see now that the British, if not the Americans, are talking seriously about demobilization of the troops. Troop strength in Iraq.
They're paying a little lip service to that. They're talking about demobilization from Iraq, but they're also talking about deployment in Uzbekistan, replacing us. It becomes very confusing as to, you know, what they're really going to do with the troops in the long run. But I will say this. The chaos in Iraq is mind-blowing. I mean, it's just like every day, you know, you hear these numbers. You know, you hear, like yesterday, the last 2 days, 24 people, including police and government workers, were killed in Iraq. And when you just hear the number, you know, somehow or another, you can, you know, put it into some context in your brain, like, was it, you know, just 25 people dead? But these are like in half a dozen or a dozen events. This isn't one event. I mean, the other day when that suicide bomber drove into that tanker.
The gas tank, yeah.
I mean, that was horrendous, and that was over 90 people killed, like 150 people injured. But over the last couple of days, you're talking about like six or seven different events where two people, one person, five people, six people get killed.
The Shia are not going to put up with this forever. The Shia, rightly or wrongly, believe that they are the targets of these insurgents. And there has been a lot of talk, including people like Muqtada al-Sadr, who has his own militia, these are folks who are now talking about retaliation. We've heard little stories, and we've talked to a couple of people over in Baghdad about the fact that there are these little stories every now and then about the Shia attacking some Sunnis. That's going to happen with increasing frequency as people start saying, you know what, if the Iraqi government cannot protect us from these insurgents, we're going to have to start protecting ourselves.
And especially when you get someone representing, a Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani saying that they care about the people, but that, quote, this is a genocidal war, end quote, that he's setting a frame there politically, for civil war, saying this is between the Shias and the Sunnis, and they want to kill all of us.
Yeah, and that could, no matter what U.S. troop strength or British troop strength or whoever else is still there, no matter what else happens, this could slide the country into civil war. They have managed successfully up until now, the Shias that are in the National Assembly in Iraq, to keep the militias off the streets, to keep the militias from taking revenge for some of these killings. Don't expect it to last forever.
All right. Hey, dude, do you know who Dave Mudcat Sanders is?
I know who Jim Mudcat Grant is.
Dave Mudcat Saunders is a political consultant that he's a good old boy, but he's a Democrat, and he says that we can get those red states back, and he's going to tell us how.
All right.
In just a few minutes. So why don't you stick around for that? We'll be talking to him on the phone. He sounds like quite a character.
Yeah.
It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. It's 27 past the hour.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. I love to gossip, man. It's like we sit here and just gossip like girls. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
I just love to gossip. It makes me feel so good, and then it makes me feel so bad right afterwards. It's a bad thing to gossip, isn't it? It's supposedly one of those bad things.
People make real good money off it.
It's character assassination, but it feels so great until you see the guy, and then you're like, oh, man, that's the guy I said all that bad stuff about, and I kind of like him.
Yeah.
And then you got to carry
then you
got to
come back and say more bad stuff about him.
Well, let's talk about how we can say some good stuff. Let's talk about how we can win back the South, my friend. Will the Deep South ever be a blue state, a bastion? Our next guest says the Democratic Party can win back rural voters with simple grassroots campaigning. That involves, I've read a piece on this dude, that involves cigarettes, fishing, bluegrass music, guns, I think, and getting to know Southerners. Please welcome to the show political consultant Dave Mudcat Saunders. Good morning, Dave.
Oh, this is Mudcat. Don't forget moonshine, Mark.
Oh, yeah, moonshine as well, of course.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's warm. I'm a little bit miserable. I'm working on this book for Simon & Schuster, and my attention span's about 30 seconds.
All right, so we'll try.
What I've been through.
All right, we'll try and keep the questions tight. So what do we got to do, Mudcat, to get the Southern Democrats or to get them voting Democrat again? What are we missing?
Well, any Democratic candidate, and I'm talking on a national level now. Of course, there's pockets throughout the South and throughout the heartland in rural America where there are Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we tend to be a little bit more conservative than the Democrats of the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that the Democrats have got to do nationally is they've got to understand the culture of Bubba and Lucille.
Uh-huh.
And they got to understand that for a long time, I mean, this hasn't been going on, just for the last 40 years. I mean, this transition of the Republicans, with wedge issues,
yeah,
such as, racial divisiveness and guns and God and gays and all that,
right,
goes, to the heart of the South. Now, I think you can get through those issues and get to the message of the Democratic Party and the 2001 in the Mark Warner campaign here in Virginia.
Yeah,
we got through the message, got through the culture, and to the point where Democrats would listen to us. I mean, people would listen to us.
Well, Mudcat, what specifically human issues in terms of relating the Democratic ideals to the people of Virginia? What were the specifics that you hit on in that campaign, that gubernatorial campaign?
Well, the first thing we said was, of course, sporting culture is very much a part of our life down here.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing Mark Warner, said was, and of course, this is a big litmus issue in the South, is that we're not going to take anybody's guns.
Okay.
That there are many gun laws on the books in Virginia now, and federal laws as well, and let's strictly enforce these laws that we have. So Bubba knew he wasn't going to, have an attack on his gun. So, and that took, the NRA out of the equation. And of course, I'm one who believes that the power of the NRA is vastly overrated. We took a wire brush to the NRA with our sportsman movement.
Yeah.
We had over 10,000 4x8 sportsmen for Warner signs, and what we did was we directed the battle towards real issues for sportsmen. Once the gun issue was over, then we talked about conservation.
Okay.
You talk about preservation of habitat when you talk about air and water quality. And notice I didn't say the word environmental.
Right.
Or environmentalist.
Right.
In most areas of the heartland and the South now, the word environmentalist is a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
And, because of the stereotyping which has gone on, The reason the Democrats have lost the South, I mean, it's been a nuclear whisper campaign. It started, from the time Hubert Humphrey tried to add civil rights to the Democratic platform at the 1948 Democratic Convention. I mean, that's when the nuclear whisper campaign started, and we got to fight back.
Right. So it's about,
we got to tell them that we're not anti-God.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's about speaking the right language is what you're saying.
Well, you got to put it in Bubba's, but this idea that the Democrats are a godless party, Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to think of something that, you know, where I don't hear deet on the line.
Right.
But it invokes anger in myself, and it invokes anger, you know, in a lot of people. First off, God doesn't give one hoot about partisan politics. He cares about the individual's heart.
Right.
And anybody that feels any different than that, I'm sorry, they're wrong. It's like, you know, who's the best country music singer, Merle Haggard or George Jones, although it's George Jones, you know.
Yeah, of course it's George Jones, but Merle Haggard had his moments.
Yeah, sure.
Now, Mudcat, let me ask you, because you've talked about the issue of race and all this. It's funny, I was reading a magazine recently that talked about the fact that in many parts of the South now, you see these churches where there are large numbers of blacks that follow white preachers, and you have substantial numbers of whites who are going to historically black churches. How do you speak to that emerging spirituality?
Well, you know, Time Magazine did a thing on prayer here. It's been a few years ago, but more Americans are praying today than ever have before. You know, the problem is that we're praying for things. The number one most prayed for thing in the world is to win the lottery. So, you know, if we're talking about churches, as far as like Ken Melman speaking to NAACP, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's targeted. He's going after successful suburban, you know, black males is who he's going after, you know, with that equation. As far as blacks attending, you know, the mega churches and whites attending black churches, I think that if God is president of church, I think that, you know, that's the one people ought to go to.
Mm-hmm. But how do you reach them with the message that they don't have to be Republicans?
That they don't have to be Republicans? Well, they're not Republicans. They've just been voting for Republicans. You know, we'll take John Kerry, for example. I mean, you've got to have a push. And people say, you know, the most rural district of Virginia is the ninth. And in the year of 2000, George Allen, of course, you know, beat our senator here, Chuck Robb. He got 60% of the vote in ninth district. George Allen did. The next year, we went back with a Democratic Harvard-trained communications millionaire named Mark Warner, and we got 60% of the vote. And people ask all the time, how'd y'all do that? And I know this sounds, you know, very, very simple, but it's the truth. We asked for their vote. That's what we did. You know, when John Kerry, you know, concedes, you know, 163 votes, you know, right off the bat and 64 more by Labor Day, that's 227 votes. Bush only had, you know, to get 14% or so of the remaining electoral votes to be elected. The first thing we as Democrats have got to do is teach the leadership of our party how to count.
So let's be practical about it. Let's talk the future. What states do you think the Democrats can win?
Are we talking? Well, first off, you know, a rural movement, a push like we did, is not just, you know, a southern or heartland movement. It's like I said in that story that y'all read. It was, you know, Pennsylvania, for instance. Mm-hmm. You got Philadelphia on one end of the state, Pittsburgh on the other. In Alabama, in the middle,
mm-hmm.
Upstate New York, you know, has tons of Bubbas. You know, Hillary Clinton did a great job of going up there and getting Bubbas.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as southern states that we can win, I don't see any reason at all why we cannot be competitive in West Virginia, in Virginia, in Tennessee, in Arkansas, in Louisiana right now, conceivably Georgia, and if we can win the panhandle of Florida, or just cut down on, you know, the Republicans' dominance over on the panhandle, then we can win Florida. But you got to ask for the votes. You got to get out there and campaign for them.
Now, Mudcat, Karl Rove managed to tap into something very interesting during last year's election. George W. Bush won a huge majority of the fastest growing counties in America. And in many instances, those are counties that used to be rural, and now they're being called part of the, quote, exurbs, unquote. What message do you have for those folks?
Well, the message I have for those folks is I think the exurbs, you know, the rural America is definitely going to be, you know, easier to retrieve. And of course, there's tons of persuadables, you know, not counting, you know, the retrievables in rural America. I know in talking with George Stephanopoulos, George Stephanopoulos thinks that the Democrats, that you've hit on something there, Mark, and our real problem is the exurbs. I think we, to do the exurbs, I think we've got to go in, you know, with a traditional message, a message of hope, you know, the same message that we preach in rural America. And also, I think that the Democrats have missed by not grabbing the mantle of small business.
Yeah.
And you know, while we haven't, there's many, many, many more small businessmen in this country than there are big businessmen and women. While we don't hit them, I'll never know.
Well, there's time, and you're going to be one of the guys doing it. You're going to be out there doing political consulting for somebody, I imagine, in the Senate races and in the 2008 presidential election. So we'll look to be hearing from you then, Mudcat Saunders. Thanks for joining with us.
Well, thank you, guys, and good luck with what you're doing here.
Okay, right, thanks a lot. You take care. That was Dave Mudcat Saunders, political consultant. I imagine he'll surface in terms of...
Oh, he'll surface. There's no doubt about
he's
it.
He's got a big plan. I like the plan. I think he's right. I think that, you know, Democratic policy and Democratic ideals definitely fit and jive with the people of the South, with working people, with people who believe in issues that are, you know, in important to their personal lives.
Oh, yeah. And remember, too, that there are a lot of folks here in... even in urban areas like New York, who have some of the same values as these folks that he's trying to reach out to in the South. Mm-hmm. And you've got to find a way to tap into them as well. You know, it's amazing. I saw a stat earlier today, Mark. 840,000 people in New York City alone make less than $11 an hour. That's $23,000 a year. You think you can live here on that?
I just don't know. I guess I see how they fooled them over time, the Republicans. But, you know, really, it really comes about, you know, talking about people first as opposed to corporations first.
Absolutely.
And you know, civil rights issues. The Republicans were just able to reframe the cultural language and use these wedge issues to separate people from themselves and their own, you know, financial well-being, you know, in terms to vote ideologically against who they are. So, yeah, well, hopefully it'll change. It's 46 past the hour. We're going to come back and finish stuff up, get a little closure maybe for this particular morning. Stay with us. It's Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. Is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
He believes, in fact, these prisoners are treated well. He believes a lot of this talk about abuses, that they're actually been overdone, and that this report by Amnesty International suggesting that, in fact, Guantanamo is a gulag is not true. Chairman Hunter also noted that while the Senate, a couple of different Senate committees are thinking about...
Ed, I'm sorry. It's Candy. I'm going to have to cut you off there. We have some breaking news out of California. I am told that we have a verdict in the Michael Jackson case.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Okay, we're doing it. We're going to put this thing down. It's 52 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition will be returning to Park Slope, Brooklyn this Friday for another live broadcast. Freddie Johnston, who I haven't heard of in a little while, has been out of the, you know, he was like a singer-songwriter guy. He was one of a few years back. I had both of his records. He's going to come and play for us. I haven't seen or heard from him in a while. We're going to be giving away a bunch of stuff. Johnny K Street, Milf Cardinal Milfing. Then we'll be there. That's at the T Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. How do you like that, Riley?
I'm down.
I'll be at the Gotham Comedy Club this week. I'm not going to plug this all week. I just feel like I should tell some people. Maybe I'll put it up. I think our website's back in order. We can do the road dates or whatever. I should put it on my own website. You have a website, Riley?
No.
I have one. I barely even go. I've got to keep mine up. My wife says to me, she goes, you need a new website.
I don't want people to touch me, much less having a website.
Yeah, I used to be into it, and I have one, and I think it looks pretty good, but I...
Do you have, like, the animated stuff, or is it just, like, you...
No, that's the thing. I don't have the animated stuff, and my wife's sort of like, yours is just, like, just sitting there. You know, I'm like,
that picture should be on your website.
The picture that guy took of me at
Yeah,
that's nice. I'm glad no one's turned it around. Hey, so what are we doing? Let's talk about this story. I think this is kind of interesting. More people are not getting married, okay? The divorce rate is high. But the divorce rate, let me get this straight. Divorce rate is falling, and one of the reasons is because a lot of people aren't getting married. People are cohabitating. Yeah. More people are cohabitating as opposed to getting married, which I think is fine. But I got married, and I've been married twice. And I had a conversation with Brendan before the show about, you know, why people don't get married. And he seemed to think that it's because of their parents. In a way that they're fighting their parents and what that represents, like the old school sort of like, you know, you don't have to be married.
Oh, they're rebelling, in other words.
Right. But okay. I'm not that sure that's true. I think that a lot of people who cohabitate, now my in-laws, this is a good example, have been cohabitating for like 20 years, mm-hmm. and they're just not going to get married. Some people just feel that way. But I think I'm trying to figure out why I got married, and why I got married was because I thought to myself, I don't want that person to ever leave me. So I will take her and I will marry her. Because I was, you know, I was leaving town too. So I believe in the commitment, and I believe that if you honor it, that, you know, you can pull it off.
Well, you know, the statistics that came out of this particular study are interesting. In 1960, the divorce rate was 9 per every 1,000 married women. I don't know why they always put it on women, but they do. It increased to 22% by 1980, and it has declined ever since. So it's down to about 18% now. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe, you know, more and more people are thinking the shacking up idea kind of sort of works for them.
I guess, you know, and I understand that. I lived with my first wife for like 8 years before we got married, and I think
here we go.
So I've been married twice because I obviously believe it in it in some way. But I guess if you're cohabitating and you trust each other and you know, you're tight with that, that's cool. But marriage, you know, it's kind of fun. It mystifies it in a way.
Well, you know, the other thing that's strange about this, this study says that people who cohabit before marriage are more likely to divorce than people who don't.
No kidding. You know, really? What's the best way to ruin a relationship in 6 years? I'll tell you.
Oh,
get married.
Live together. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? If you've been living with somebody that long and then you decide to get married, where's the big, you know, how is it not going to be disappointing? If you get married after like 2 years, you're still like, yay, now we're married. If you've been with each other for like 6 or 7 years and you get married, it's sort of like, so what happens now? As you look the same, I look the same. Where the hell's the fun? You already know everything. You know, you got to do it early on to go ahead.
We've got people applauding over here.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. How am I ever going to get through this? Here's the morning's edition Cliff Notes. The Civilian Border Protection Group, known as the Minutemen Project, is ramping up efforts in Southern California. There aren't that many Minutemen. A lot of them got laid off because management found some Mexicans who'd be vigilantes for half the price. The new production of Shakespeare's Richard III has turned the title character into Saddam Hussein. Those with a taste for the Iraq War and Shakespeare should also check out a new production which explores the entire WMD debacle in a revival of Much Ado About Nothing. Just a coincidence, but for the last 5 years, George and Laura Bush have been starring in their own production of Macbeth. Hey, following Richard III with Saddam, the company is going to stage another Shakespeare play about the American occupation, A Comedy of Errors.
Ooh.
That was a three-puncher. We ran out of time on it, but what can you do? Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. We have paramilitary. Now it's para-border guards. Wake up, sheeple. Next it's going to be para-congressmen, para-judges. To the neocons, this is paradise. Dig it?
Uh-oh.
All right.
Guess who we got tomorrow?
What?
Emmy-winning and Emmy-nominated Tony Shalhoub from the TV show Monk. Paul Thompson, author of The Terror Timeline, and more. Have a good one, Meredith.
It's
been fun. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.